It's a group of workers, a little over 200 in number, 95% Hispanic, who were working in conditions, obviously non-union. Plant is fairly archaic, some unsafe working conditions, and the line speed is critical to how safe the plant becomes, and workers had grown weary of people getting hurt and just being terminated, and so they collectively one morning on June 1st gathered in the break room and said, you know what, before we go on the line, we're going to issue a statement to the employer to either slow the line down or we're not working. And so management, in its wisdom, once they got the message, said, well, if you're not working, then get the hell out of the plant. And so workers gathered in mass on the processing side, and a little over 100 and a quarter of the workers are on processing, 75 plus on kill. Kill starts later, so processing just walked out. And so they stood outside, and the employer was dumbfounded because these people had no contract. Most of them didn't speak English, but they decided that they were better off to take a position and let the employer know that they wanted safe working conditions.
So, Bill, is that a wildcat strike right there?
That's a great question because we just don't see that. Right. It's a wildcat strike if there's a union contract that forbids the strike. But in this case, it was workers who just decided that collectively they were going to stand together.
Okay.
And so
June 1st, 2000, just the workers just said, we've had enough, and without a contract, without a union.
We're not going to work and endanger one another's lives. Mm-hmm. And in fact, part of the message, they gave the employer an edict, and like 8 or 9 of them got elected to a committee to go up and meet with Cortinas. Steve Cortinas is the plant manager, and he finally said, well, come on in. In the interim, while people were standing outside, one of the workers walked the 6 blocks to our union hall and walked in and, in broken English, said, can you help us? And we have a plant in Long Prairie, Minnesota, owned by Rosen Industries, and of course we're familiar with this plant. We had an organizing campaign back in 92. I sent a couple of union reps over, and they drove up, and within a matter of minutes, workers just kind of came out from between cars and out in the parking lot out of nowhere, and pretty soon they had some 75 or 80 workers gathered around them. We issued cards, passed out cards in Spanish, asking if they'd like to be represented. We picked up about 85 cards that day.
85 out of 200?
Well, there's about 100-plus workers out in the lot. There were still some that stayed inside.
Okay.
And, of course, Kill wasn't involved at this point. So of the 100-plus that were outside, we had the vast majority of them sign cards. Over the next several weeks, we picked up another 50 or 60 cards, so we clearly had a majority. In any event, the workers on the committee went back in and negotiated a return-to-work agreement after about 6 hours and struck a deal that they would establish a line speed of no greater than, I think it was like 118.
Okay.
And workers monitored that over the next year, so.
Okay, and it had been up as high as, what, 200?
It was running 127, 128.
Okay.
And so workers continually were monitoring it from that point forward.
Okay, so you just described an incredible array of things, right? You described unsafe working conditions in a factory where there are people with sharp knives and these giant carcasses coming by, and they've got to make some very precise cuts in these big pieces of beef that are coming through, and they're getting hurt in the process. Is that right?
Yeah, there were several workers that had been injured, and what the plant had been doing was just telling people that if they got hurt at work, they didn't need them. And let them go.
Okay. And so they were speeding up the line, making it even more dangerous. The workers got together and they said, we're not going to have this anymore. They walk out. They go into management, have one meeting. They send another guy back to the union. The union comes out. The union organizers dream. There are 100 people around them. 85 of them sign cards just like that. And so you think, well, this is a solution. This is a formula for a solution right here, right? So did you go ahead and have an election then?
Yeah, I was curious. So I went over there later that day before the workers returned to work, and I ran into the plant manager and their attorney that I know from our plant up in Long Prairie and said, look, guys, we're going to win an election here. The workers are serious about this. We can have a contract, and we want a card check. We can have an election, or we want a card check. We can have a contract inside of 4 months. Anticipating that the company would do the right thing, foolish as I was, on July 21, we had an election, won it by 50-some votes. Clear majority of the workers wanted to be represented by the union in spite of a number of stupid things by the company. And then the fun began.
Okay. So within 7 weeks after this walkout, you've had the election, and the workers said by an overwhelming majority that, yes, they want a union. So the next step is to go ahead and negotiate a contract.
So we thought.
Okay. What happened instead of that?
The employer hired Behrens and Tate, a notorious law firm out of Omaha, Nebraska, that does a lot of anti-union stuff, and immediately filed charges to the election, claiming the most preposterous, bizarre mistakes by the union, claiming that we had bribed workers $10,000 a vote, claiming that we threatened to have the immigrant workforce deported if they didn't vote for the union. Again, the entire, through each step of the process, we brought people in to counsel workers to explain their rights with the INS. When there was an election on, we had a case here, the Holiday Inn case, where workers had been threatened to be deported, and we had very clear positions by the INS that workers they'd have a hands-off position on an organizing campaign. And so we were in a nice position. But the employer made allegations, and the board has an obligation to respond. And so over the next 4 months, we had tied up in board proceedings, which cost the employer a fortune. They had two attorneys literally living here for the first 3 months of the process. It was incredibly expensive. We've calculated to date somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 in attorney's fees.
All right, and so you went through all this. You know, you're hoping to negotiate a contract because people clearly want there to be a union. You have the board hearings in November of 2000, and what happened at the board hearing?
Well, they began sooner than that, but we got a decision by the end of November from the board locally here in Minneapolis that said this was a clean election. There was no fouls by the union. There's no proof of any wrongdoing. The union wins. So for a second time, we have been ruled the winner.
Okay, great. So the labor board ruled in your favor. You can go ahead and negotiate a contract now, right?
There again, we were a little bit miffed because we were wrong once again. The company appealed the decision locally to the National NLRB, claiming that the people here in the Minneapolis office didn't know what they were doing.
So that takes quite a bit of time.
We waited about 6 months. We got another ruling from the board from Washington, and they said, the union wins, you're right. The election process was clearly legitimate. There were no fouls by the union. The union is certified as the bargaining representative.
Okay, so now this is a year after the workers went out on their wildcat strike.
A year and a month, I guess. Yep.
And, you know, they had the election right away. They won the regional decision 4 months later. They won the national decision a year and a month later. So is the company convinced yet? Do these guys have a union? Do these folks have a union?
Well, they know that because the chairman of the board, President Bush had just named a new chairman of the board, who's an old business crony, and it goes before a three-judge panel. And so when they got the decision and they read that the chairman of the board had been the sole objector out of the board of three, even though we won, they said, you know, the chairman, the most important of the three people, really believed that the company was right. So we're going to appeal that decision to Washington.
Again,
what's fascinating is that we actually at that point were certified. There is no appeal process. We sent a letter to the employer in August demanding that they negotiate in good faith because we were now the certified bargaining representative. They said, well, with all due respect, we're appealing the decision, and so we don't have to bargain.
Okay, so they just refused to bargain.
Yeah.
Okay, so the way that labor law is supposed to work is it's supposed to provide an orderly process by which employees can form a group and negotiate a contract with their employer instead of having everyone go in individually. And, you know, the process is supposed to be petition to have an election. You have an election. If people vote for the group bargaining situation or union bargaining, then that obligates the employer to negotiate with you. But under the National Labor Relations Act and what you're just describing, that law isn't working. Is that basically it?
Oh, I think that's a very appropriate statement. We've now filed 10J charges here, and they appealed. The board ruled that they locally had an obligation to bargain. Now they've appealed that. It's even more bizarre. So a year and a half after the fact, after an election where we clearly won, where the turnover in a packing house is staggering, as you can well imagine, we've of the 225 workers in the plant, we've probably got 125 new workers from the day we from the day of the walkout on June 1st of 2000. We're no closer to a contract. They've never for 1 minute sat down to bargain. They're on appeal in Washington and continuing to submit briefs, protesting the decision of the board. The good news is that at some point in the next 6 months, they'll have to sit down and bargain with us.
So how are the workers feeling at this point?
I mean, frustrated, demoralized, strong union supporters are certainly less than that. Leaders who were willing to stand up and fight the company when they were being abused with line speeds have just given up. I mean, you can well imagine how people feel when they've won five times now, one election and four decisions by the board, and yet we're no closer to a contract than the day they walked out. In fact, further away, and I hate to say that, but it's the process. It's got to change. We've got to demand that labor laws in this country be reformed so that workers have rights. The board was formed to protect workers. Wasn't formed for unions, wasn't formed for employers, it was formed to protect workers. And this is a classic example of a worker who said, look, I want some basic protections, I want some decent wages, I want some guarantees in a contract, and I'm willing to fight to get it, and they did, and they won, and they've won nothing.
Right. Okay, well, Bill, you've been around the union movement for over 20 years, right?
Right.
Okay, and you expected the company to actually respect the law and to negotiate a contract after the workers said that they wanted a union, right?
Our relationship with this employer was better than this. And so, yeah, I expected, I think relationships are such that when something happens, you do the right thing.
Okay, but the company said that they knew that the National Labor Relations Board or the labor system was weak enough that they could delay things almost indefinitely.
Oh, sure.
And that's what they chose to do. If you had to do this over again, would you have trusted the courts and would you have trusted the system, or would you have encouraged the workers to take a different route?
I would have taken a different route.
What would that have been?
Well, the whole issue of the board is one, you want to believe that they're gonna support the rights of workers. The fact of the matter is this group of workers, the action they took on June 1st is, I think, the action that needs to be embraced more often by unions and workers. You just shut an employer down.
You just
say that you either accept these terms and conditions or we're not working.
Mm-hmm.
And until we come to grips with that in this country, I don't think we'll ever see the laws change to encourage workers to stand up for their rights and speak out for what's what they should have in a contract or their right to join a union. We need to change those laws, or we need to force employers to accept or understand that workers are going to take them on in whatever fashion is necessary. And
okay.
I mean, that's the reason they put the laws in, so that they didn't have people out in the streets and they didn't have bloodshed and they didn't have, you know, the goons beating the hell out of one another. And I mean, the last thing you ever want to see is that. But when workers are put in positions where there is no alternative, where if you've got enough money you can spend it and beat them, then pretty soon people are forced into conditions and actions that are maybe not the right way to go in the long run. But you know, it's always that kind of irresponsible behavior by an employer that forces others to respond irresponsibly. And I think we're coming to that point. I mean, we've made it clear to this employer, when we get to the table, we're going to embarrass this person, the owner of this company. We're going to go to his churches with workers. We're going to make his neighbors understand that this is a man that stands, you know, tall in the community, and then does this to the immigrant population. And you have to play the game by whatever rules they force you to play them by. And we're prepared to do that. We're going to get a contract. If it takes 3 years or 4 years, you can never quit. Since the workers stood up, I've tried to follow Cesar Chavez, and fascinating, because he should never have won, but he never quit, and he won. And I've learned an awful lot from these workers. You can't be afraid. You have to be proud of who you are and what you do, and then you've got to be willing to fight to make it work. And we're going to get a contract for these workers. They taught me more than I learned in anything else I've done.
So in the 1930s, we were in a similar situation in that there were really no labor laws, and when workers wanted a union, they could try to negotiate, and the company would bring in goons and beat them back, literally, physically. And so then it wasn't until the Flint sit-down strike, when the workers there actually took over the General Motors plant and didn't come out until they had a contract. That's what it took. And I guess if you'd seen what was coming, you might have suggested to these workers that they just not go back to work or they shut the place down until they had an actual contract.
Peter, I would have taken the strength that they showed on June 1st and made it work for them.
Okay.
They taught me a valuable lesson. I'm not, you know, anybody that doesn't learn as they go on this job is foolish. So you're exactly right. The Flint, Michigan strike, the strikes down here in South St. Paul, where workers took to the streets and refused to be intimidated or bullied or coerced into doing the wrong things are the way we have to look at changing our labor laws.
Okay, then one last question I want to ask you. You're up there in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is where Senator Paul Wellstone is from. There's some talk of reforming labor laws and making them meaningful once again, and Paul Wellstone is at the top of that. Can you describe just quickly for us what's happening with that process, what Senator Wellstone is proposing, and where it stands?
It's been put on hold. We were actually working with Paul. In fact, we had John Sweeney slated to come into Minnesota here. But it will resurface shortly after the first of the year, you know, with the events of September 11th. Significant reform was put on hold pending a number of other priorities in our Senate. But we will see it after the first of the year. Paul's going to introduce legislation that allows workers to organize without fear of being jumping through these kinds of hoops. And this case, I can tell you, will be one of the backdrops, if not the major backdrop, for making the argument, because it's the classic example of workers denied justice.
Bill Pearson, thank you very much for your time today.
Peter, it was my pleasure.